Welcome to this edition of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson, an Australian look at reinventing yourself for retirement and getting yourself retirement ready. It's always fascinating getting to know what people are getting up to in retirement, how they are supplementing their incomes, pensions, where they have chosen to live, how they are filling their time, what charities they are supporting, and what adventures they are having. And we'll also talk to experts in their fields, including investing, health, estate planning, financial advisors, and seniors' health care.
Welcome to the show. This is Ann Nelson, your host. I'm very excited to have our guest today, Jordan Goodman, America's Money Answers Man. Jordan has spent the last 40 years focused on one mission, to help Americans do better with their money. In a career spanning newspapers, magazines, books, radio, television, live events, teleseminars, and the internet, where he is the host of a weekly national show called Money Answers Radio Show for Voice America. Jordan has helped millions of people to solve their financial problems and realize their financial dreams. So welcome, Jordan.
Great to be with you, Al. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Can you please tell me how you got to be America's Money Answers Man briefly?
Sure. Well, I've been a journalist, as I said, for about 40 years. I started on Cape Cod in Hyannis, Massachusetts, where the Kennedys grew up. You probably are familiar with Hyannis. That's where I started about age 12. I won't go through the whole thing, but started journalistic things there. Went to Amherst College in Massachusetts. Always was doing journalistic things. When I went to Columbia University School of Journalism, started getting interested in economics and personal finance then. Then I went to Money Magazine, which is the largest personal finance magazine in America. I was there for 18 years covering every aspect of personal finance. And pretty early on in my time at Money, I started doing radio shows and TV shows. My first book was in 1984 called The Dictionary of Finance and Investment Terms, and that's now in its ninth edition. It sold about 3 million copies around the world. So I've done a total of about 13 books, and I'm doing these radio shows where they're call-ins and people ask me questions, and I started doing TV and on CNN and Fox and all these different places. I started my website, moneyanswers.com, in 1993, so it's been quite a while, and that's kind of a central location for people to find out about all aspects of personal finance. I just love it, Ann. I just love helping people in all these different areas. So I know about a lot of resources that can really help people, a lot of strategies. So during our time together, I'm not only going to talk about strategies, but specific websites, places people can go to implement these strategies.
Wow, thanks. You've done a lot, and we've very thankful to have your experience and expertise here. So my listeners are interested in retirement, and I think we need to have a look at this well before. So are you able to take us through some steps about how to accumulate enough capital to live comfortably in retirement?
Very much important. A lot of people are not saving close to enough. People are living longer and saving less. That's not a good combination, Ann, because you're going to live longer. You need more, not less. And even what they are accumulating in many, many cases is sitting there earning nothing. You know, money markets and bank accounts and certificates of deposit, all zero is what you get. And in many cases, in Germany, Switzerland, it's negative. You know, so that's not a way to make your money grow, is keep it in the bank, basically. So first step is actually to be saving and putting some money aside. But the second step is to make the money grow in some kind of good way. So I'll tell you one example of something that's really quite safe that people from around the world can do, that's very simple from a website, which is what's called commercial real estate income funds. And there's a website for that, commercialrealestateincomefunds.com. It's a way of earning 8% yield annually with monthly checks, which you can either take or reinvest. So say you start it when you're in your 50s, and you don't need the money yet, have the money be compounding. And by the time you get to your 60s or 70s, it really builds up a lot with your money growing at 8 to 10%. And then when you get to retirement, you need the income, say, okay, instead of reinvesting, have it pay to me directly. That's the kind of thing. So what they do, Ann, is they lend money to high-quality commercial real estate projects. that use it to renovate projects over a one-year period, something like that, to improve the value of the projects. And they pay the interest, and when the project is done, it's typically sold, and you, the fund shareholder, actually get to share in the profits from that project. Mm-hmm. And so you get an additional what's called profit sharing on a quarterly basis when the projects are sold. So you get 8% plus another 2% thereabouts once the projects are sold. So the maximum that they lend against the property is 70% of the value of the property. So the borrower always has a lot of skin in the game, as we would call it, and they're not going to default because they want the thing to succeed. They're in it to improve it, not lose it, okay? I'll just give you an example, if that would be helpful, of a specific kind of project that they did.
So that's the yield is the important factor.
8%, indeed, in a 0% world. I'll just give you one example that would be helpful. There was a recent guy who had a big house in a university town, and he was renting it to two students. He got a loan from the fund, completely renovated the house, and a year later, he could rent it to four students. He put in four bathrooms, four kitchens, four doors. So a year from now, from when he started, it was worth double what it was before. You know, that's the kind of thing that he knows it's going to succeed. And he has every reason in the world to pay his loan back because it's going to be worth double what it was a year ago. And he can't, and it's hard for him to get a loan from a bank. So banks are very, very difficult, particularly in America, because of the financial crisis. So they get a loan from this fund. They get it quickly. They get it done. And then when he sells the building, which is now worth double what it was a year ago, he shares some of the profits back with the fund. So those are what are called commercial real estate income funds. There's a way for the average person, without being an expert in real estate, can be done from anywhere in the world, can earn 8 to 10% quite safely. So that's one example of having your money grow in retirement in a way that otherwise it's just sitting there earning pretty much nothing in the bank.
Okay. Is there any other ways that you can get high yield safe investments?
Absolutely.
To find them?
Absolutely. So another one would be oil and gas. There are oil and gas funds that have existing wells, not new wells, but existing wells where it's already pumping out oil. One I'm involved in, their break even is $18 a barrel. Well, oil today is like $50 a barrel. So they're making good money on that. They're not exploring for new oil. This is already existing there. And you can be getting yields of about 8 to 9% on something like that as well. So that's a completely different thing from the real estate. Those are two examples. There are other things called master limited partnerships, MLPs. And what they do is they own pipelines and energy infrastructure. Pipelines bringing the oil from the oil fields to the refineries, for example. Think of it as like a toll road. Once they've installed the road, they just keep collecting income as long as oil and gas is going through it. I'll just give you some examples. There's one called Enterprise Products Partners, EPD. Another one called TransEnergy. There's several of these things. And again, it's a very stable way of earning. Now, the yields on those are maybe about 5%, something in that range. But those are publicly traded stocks that go up and down. So there's some risk of principal, because when interest rates rise, those tend to go down. The oil and gas fund and the commercial real estate income fund do not trade, so their principal does not go up and down. So those are three examples where your money can earn a lot more than sitting in the bank earning nothing.
Right. So do you find that are there other ways that people can do to help themselves get to retirement age so they're free of debt and they're sort of ready to enjoy their retirement?
Absolutely. So a lot of people are entering retirement these days with much more debt than previous generations. Maybe they refinance their mortgage to get a lower interest rate. Well, that's nice, but they started a new 30-year clock all over again. Or maybe they took out equity from their house to renovate it or something like that. So the people entering retirement with mortgage debt, which is really the first time we've ever had something like that. Sometimes grandparents will take out student loans for their grandchildren or children. And they're entering retirement with student loans from not even their own student days, because I see this all the time. Colleges are so expensive that people don't have enough money. The kid is maxed out on loans. The parents are maxed out on loans. And who's next in line? The grandparents, right? So you're in your 50s or 60s. You finally got debt free and your 17-year-old kid is saying, if you don't help me, I can't go to school, and all this guilt trip. So I'm seeing grandparents ending up with student loan debt as well. So you really, when your income goes down because you're retired, you don't want to have debt if you can possibly avoid it. So here's some specific things you can do. On the mortgage side, there's a system which is actually pretty common in Australia, but not as much around the world, which is called mortgage optimization. And that allows you to pay your mortgage off much, much faster. Typically, you pay off a 30-year mortgage in about 5 to 7 years, something like that. And there's a website to find out about it as well, which is called truthinequity.com. And basically what it does is it uses a home equity line of credit, or what we call a HELOC, H-E-L-O-C, which is a liquid line against your house. You put money in your HELOC instead of keeping it in your bank account, and every day you're making a little bit of progress in your principal. And so as opposed to making almost no progress with a traditional 30-year mortgage, your money is working for you every day. And the end result is your principal balance is going down at an accelerating rate as you pay your mortgage off faster. And then it's completed by the time you get to retirement, you're mortgage free, which is what you want to be. So that's a strategy that a lot of people are not particularly familiar with. And banks will never tell you about that. Banks want you to pay for 30 years and even better, refinance when you're 60. And, you got a lower rate and a lower payment. Yeah, but you just started a new 30-year clock. You'll pay it off when you're 90, right? So that's something that banks will never tell you about, is the so-called mortgage optimization strategy. And, again, a free website to find out how it works in your specific case at truthinequity.com. You put in the numbers that apply to your situation, your income, your expenses, the value of your house, your mortgage, all these things. And they say, okay, based on what you're doing today, it's going to take you 28 more years to pay off your mortgage. If you do these things, it'll be 6.2 years, whatever it may be, and then they show you step by step how to do it. So that can be a huge thing for retired people.
It's a huge difference. And then you've got all that surplus money to do invest wisely for your retirement.
And to get an income. Instead of being paying interest, you're earning interest. This is what I call the difference between positive compounding and negative compounding. Positive compounding is where your money is producing more money and it's growing all the time. Negative compounding is where you've got interest piling up against you all the time, falling yourself deeper and deeper into debt. So what a difference in your lifestyle between a positive compounding and a negative compounding lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I don't think people start early enough. Another technique you mentioned is life insurance, a policy. I don't think I've heard of this one before. Can you explain that, okay, please?
So a lot of people who get near retirement or in retirement have life insurance policies, and the premiums start going up, and maybe it's unaffordable, so they let the policy lapse, which makes the insurance company very happy. They've been getting premiums for you all these years. They never had to pay off, and they're just like, bye. And that was nice. Thanks for the premiums for all those years. But the better solution, people don't realize that you can sell those life insurance policies into what's called the life settlement market and make tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars. So let me just give you a simple example of how this might use. Say you had an insurance policy for $1 million, and say you had $100,000 in cash value in it, something like that. And say you're 70 and you've got a heart condition or something like that. You're not in the best of health. So you say, okay, I don't want to pay the premiums anymore on this thing. Let me sell that policy into the life settlement market, and I might get $400,000 for it, right? So the people buy it for $400,000. They take over paying the premiums. When you die, they get the million.
That's interesting.
You get $400,000. You don't have to make the premium payments anymore. And whenever you die, they get the death benefit. Now tell your kids about this because they're not going to get the death benefit. You're selling it off now, but it gives you cash, which you can use either to invest or to pay off debt or, spend whatever you like, okay? So there's a website for that too, which is fundinglife.com, fundinglife.com. What they do is they put buyers and sellers of life insurance policies together with each other. So you would be the seller of a life insurance policy. There's loads of people wanting to buy them because in the case of our example, okay, they put up $400,000, but they know they're going to get $1 million. They just don't know when. Okay, now the older you are, and frankly, the sicker you are, the more you're going to get. because the people buying the policy would rather that you not stick around too long. So that's why I'm saying if you had a heart condition or something where you're not going to last that long, you're going to get a lot more money. They do a medical underwriting to see what kind of shape you're in. So if you're really healthy and young, you're not going to be able to sell a policy. People don't want to spend $400,000 and wait 30 years. You know, they might be willing to wait 10 years or something like that. So, because remember, they have to keep paying the premiums as well. But it's a market, and life insurance agents will never tell you about, because the insurance companies want you to just lapse the policy and they keep all the premiums you paid for all those years. Hmm. How about that?
How about that? Is this only in America?
All over the world. All over the world. And that same place I just gave you, fundinglife.com, can fund life insurance policies from anywhere in the world. That's a huge market of people wanting to buy these things because they do get a good return on their money. They just don't know when. I mean, from their point of view, you know, it'd be great if you got run over by a bus tomorrow, you know, but they're not counting on it. They've got actuaries, and they'll have a full portfolio of maybe 100,000 of these loans, and actuarially, somebody's going to be dying all the time, so they're always getting some payoff. But from your point of view, you don't have to pay the premiums anymore, and you can get hundreds of thousands of dollars that otherwise would just vanish into thin air as you let the policies lapse. So there's the whole world of so-called life settlements. So you can use that money, pay off any debts you may have, and hopefully invest it to get some nice income from it. Make it an asset instead of a liability.
Mm-hmm. I've sort of vaguely heard it mentioned before. I think it was maybe in the movies, but I never really realized it was real.
Oh, it's definitely real. Absolutely.
Okay, so where are we going to go now? So we've when do you think people, in your experience, have looked at their nest egg, so to speak, and when should they actually look at their nest egg and wonder, start doing more towards it? Do you find that people are leaving it too late and they really should be starting earlier?
Definitely leaving it too late. You should start when you get your first job, hopefully in your 20s sometime, and set up as many automatic savings vehicles as possible. Because there's a wonderful thing called compounding. We talked about it a little bit. The more time you have for compounding to work, the better it's going to be. I would rather be younger and have less money and have more time for it to compound than start later when you might have more money but less time. The value of time compounding is just staggering over time. So a lot of people wait till they're like 35 or something like that. Those years from, say, 25 to 35 can be enormous. Because remember, you're talking about 30 to 40 years of compounding here. So absolutely. Now, in America, we have what are called 401ks, which is a way of saving through your work where they put aside money on a pre-tax basis. I think you've got something somewhat similar in Australia. The main idea is to have it be automatic out of your paycheck. Because if it's not automatic, it's not going to happen. There's what I call wishful savings and actual savings. Wishful savings is I'll get to the end of the month and the money will some magically show up and I'll save it. Doesn't happen. Actual savings comes out automatically. You don't even think about it. And the right things are automatically happening. To save for retirement, it's a long-term process. And the more automatic you make it, the better. So certainly at work is a good thing. But in addition to that, in America, we call it individual retirement accounts. What do they call it in Australia? The retirement accounts where you can put money in for tax-free?
We call it superannuation.
Same kind of thing. So your money is growing without being taxed for many, many years.
Yes.
And that's
right.
True around the world. Yeah. That's a wonderful thing. A lot of people don't take advantage of that. So put the maximum you possibly can put into those kind of things and grow it long term. And again, don't just keep it there sitting earning nothing. Have it grow for you. The younger you are, the more aggressive you could be with it, because you have time to fall back if things go down temporarily. If you're a year before retirement, you need the money, you should be taking a lot less risk than if you're in your 20s and you need the money 40 years from now. So that's the general principle. The younger you are, the more risk you should take, and the older you are, the more conservative you should be. That's the theory, Anne. I do a lot of seminars. I see the reality is usually the exact opposite, meaning young people say, well, I've only got $2,000 to my name. I can't afford to risk it. And I said, you've only got $2,000 to your name. You have nothing to lose. Okay, you're giving up all the potential growth for the next 40 years by keeping it in the bank earning nothing. But I can't afford to lose it. Yes, you can. Take a risk. And then as people go older, they say, oh, boy, I've got to take more risk because I haven't saved enough. So I've got to make up at higher rates of return for the lack of savings I've done. So they get more and more risky. And then the day before they hit retirement, their entire nest egg is in one pork belly's contract to make up what they should have done the last 40 years, you know, because they've got – you get riskier and riskier because you have to make up for what you should have been doing. That's the way I find a lot of people actually do, which is the complete wrong way to do it. But I've done enough seminars to hear when people say, well, I don't have enough time. I haven't started saving enough. So I'm going to get riskier and riskier in order to make it. Like, yeah, but what if something goes wrong? Well, I'll figure that out. I've got good luck with investing, whatever. People do crazy things. So I've told you the right way to do it. I tell the way – the wrong way a lot of people actually do it.
Yeah. And I found here in Australia, as people get older, there's some people that are promoting the idea that you need to have more of your money in fixed income, equivalent to even to your age, I've heard, to be safe. But then
the problem is that you earn so little. That, if you had interest rates were higher, but rates are very, very low these days, and they're going to stay low for quite a while. So that doesn't work anymore. Maybe when rates were higher, but not now.
No, and then the inflation erodes our money as well too, doesn't it? And we're all
– in Australia is pretty low. In Europe, literally, I think about a third of the countries in Europe, the rates are literally negative. You don't earn anything. You actually – what pace you're losing money. In Germany, you can do a minus 2% bond, something like that. The same is true in Japan and Spain and France and Switzerland. The stronger the countries, the more negative their interest rates are.
Yeah.
So your money is somewhat safe. You're only going to lose 1% or 2% as opposed to, you know, I wouldn't move group bonds with the whole thing could default. But in today's low interest rate world, keeping a lot of money in fixed income does not make a lot of sense for retirees.
Yeah, and that's so, and they're not factoring in inflation either, because that's eroding our money as well.
Correct. You need your money growing in this environment. Yeah, the purchasing power goes down over time.
Yeah,
and if it's not growing, you're falling further and further behind. That's correct. And living longer. I mean, that's the thing. Miracles of modern science are wonderful, but who's going to be paying for all these many more years that we're living into the 80s and 90s? I mean, there are places around the world, they have a tremendous demographic time bomb that's going on. In Japan, China to some extent, lots of Europe, older and older population, still alive, but they don't have anything close to the income they need, and they don't have the younger people to support them. So these are kind of these demographic time bombs that are going off around the world. I think that's probably true in Australia to some extent, but I think Japan would probably be the worst, where they have very few young people and rising percentage of older people.
Yeah, we have record low interest rates, but they're still higher than a lot of countries. We still can get, I think the last time my mum reinvested her fixed term deposit was, she got 3% and she was considered lucky to get 3%. But
yes.
Yeah, it's probably a little bit less than that now. But yeah, still, we're still better off than a lot of countries around the world.
Right.
So I believe you spoke earlier about your books. Would you like you've been an author for quite some time now. Would you like to talk to us about some of your books that you've written?
Sure. So the first book I mentioned, I did first in 1984, is now in its ninth edition, is called The Dictionary of Finance and Investment Terms. And I define over 5,000 terms of finance investment. I find a lot of people go to the right schools and never learn about any of this stuff at all. They come out, they know everything about Greek philosophy and Egyptian art and all kinds of wonderful stuff. But all the things we've talked about, you know, compound interest and super annuitization and stocks and mutual funds, this is like a complete new world to them. So that book just very simply explains all these terms in a way that kind of empowers people. Another book I did is called Fast Profits and Hard Times. When the economy turned down in 2008, how are you supposed to do well with your money? So I go through a whole series of – there's a lot of strategies that can do well even if things are bad in the economy. I mean, just to give you an example, foreign exchange. right? Foreign exchange is always, something's always going to be up and something's always going to be down. Lately, the dollar's been up. A lot of other currencies have been down. Well, there are very simple ways to play that. So you profit as one goes up and one goes down without having to take a huge amount of risk. So no matter what's going on in the economy, there are always ways to profit from it. So I did that book. I did a book called Master Your Money Type, which is about your financial personalities. And there are different personalities that you have. And I explain the psychology as to why you became that and also what you're supposed to do about it. I'll just briefly go. I have six different money types. I've got, in no particular order, the high rollers, strivers, the coasters, desperados, the squirrels, and the ostriches. The life success. So I go into great detail about all of them. And basically I say, understand what your money type is and be the best you can be. You don't have to change money types. If you're an ostrich and you don't like to deal with money issues, that's what you're going to be. But be the best ostrich you can be. Kind of get into the right habits, you know. Or if you're a squirrel, squirrels are all about fear and holding on to things very, very tightly and not taking any risk, penny pinching to the ultimate extreme, and they don't have much of an exciting life, but at least they're safe. So be the best squirrel you can be. Have a little bit of fun in your life and invest in something that's pretty safe. So that's one of my other books was called Master Your Money Type. Have a little fun with that one. And then also when you have a spouse, see what your combination is. I mean, often it's better to have a little bit of contrast. If you have two squirrels, it's very boring, okay? If you have a high roller and a squirrel, it creates a little bit more tension, but it's going to be more fun that way. Or you don't want two high rollers because they're just taking risk all the time and there's no safety net whatsoever. So you can have a little fun with your spouse and see if you're a similar or different money type.
Wow. That I'll have to buy it. It sounds fascinating and really, really interesting and fun. Yeah.
It is.
Okay. Now, you appear on many radio shows and on your TV show. So you're answering money questions for people all the time. You've had a lot of experience in this, and I believe you also do some not-for-profit work as well. So would you mind telling us what else you do?
Sure. So I mean, I'm very much into financial education, financial literacy, because I find a lot of people, all the things we've been talking about is a complete mystery to most people. So I, for example, go into the schools. I'm in the New York area. I go into the schools and do seminars for the kids about investing and get them all excited about it. It's like a whole new world they've never experienced. And I said, just see what's in this room that you can invest in. So, oh, you're wearing Nike sneakers and you just had a Coca-Cola and you had a McDonald's and you, who's got the power, the utility of this room and what clothes are you wearing? It's just, they don't even realize they're in a world of things that you can invest in. It's like, really? Oh, yeah. So it just kind of wakens them up. So I do a lot in the whole financial education world. That's very important to me. I sponsor a kid in Nepal and Save the Children. I mean, I do other kinds of other I'm on various boards and things. But financial education is really important. And a lot of people are either not learning it at all or learning it too late to have an impact on their retirement. And the end result is they get to retirement with nothing close to enough to live comfortably. And what they do have is earning so little today that they're really having a hard time. That if they can start early enough, and I hope some of your listeners are not only in retirement, but still have some time to do something about it and have that money growing for them, that could really make a huge difference in living a long time. I mean, the fastest growing part of the population worldwide is 90 plus.
90 plus. Getting,
that percentage wise, those are the ones that are growing the fastest because all the medical advances and all that kind of thing. It's like, it's one of my mother's 91. And she's doing great. So this is what's going to happen to a lot of us. That's wonderful. But do you have the money to support that kind of long lifestyle?
That's right. And the other thing, I suppose, is do you have enough money to support your health in once you get older? Because it can end up being quite expensive, can't it?
The last few years particularly, every year that goes by, you spend more and more in healthcare. And typically the last year – you'll spend more in healthcare than the rest of your life combined, is typically what happens. Particularly if you go into the hospital and all that. It's very, very expensive. And so your quality of life deteriorates as you spend more in healthcare. Somehow it doesn't seem like the right way of working it, but that's what it is. So you have to save up for that. Now, in America, we have something called health savings accounts. We can put aside money, have it grow tax-free as long as you use it for health expenses. You probably have something similar in Australia as well. But you've got to put money aside for healthcare as well. There's a lot of reasons you have to put money aside. I mean, Australia's probably not as bad as the U.S., but we're very much kind of an instant gratification society. People want everything now, and the future will somehow take care of itself.
Right.
Usually it doesn't.
Wow. So nursing home care costs, could that be used, that fund be used for that?
Absolutely.
To buy.
Now, there's a specific kind of insurance for that, which is called long-term care insurance.
Oh.
So that would be nursing homes, home health care aides. Not that many people end up in the nursing home. Well, only about 5% of the population ends up in a nursing home, which is extremely expensive. You know, $10,000 or more a month in many parts of the United States, sometimes way more than that. And so what people do is they carefully built up all the savings and then it's spent right through for the nursing home in the last few years when your quality of life is not great. It happened in my own case. My grandmother was in a nursing home for 12 years, and she went through $700,000 in 12 years, the last five of which she had Alzheimer's. So she was completely out of it. But just because you have Alzheimer's doesn't mean that the bills go down, right? So she literally, their entire life savings went to the nursing home, basically, is what happened. So that, to me, is not a particularly good use of money.
No. It's amazing and frightening to think that.
It is.
So how much is enough? I suppose that's the big question. How much do you think we need? We can go through a budget and say we're going to spend less money now than in retirement than what we do now. But in reality, is that what happens?
Well, if you're going to live longer, and as I said, the health expenses go up every year, you're not going to be able to save enough to cover that is what happens. And that's where people, I mean, in America, we have what's called Medicaid, which is for poor people, but you have to qualify for it. And the way you qualify for it is you have to start giving your assets away starting 5 years before you actually need it. You can't, like, give your assets away to your kids and say, okay, I'm showing up the nursing home, I'm ready now. You know, it doesn't work that way. It's a whole process. It's what I call the planned impoverishment business. Learning how to give your money away in the correct way so that when the 5 years comes, you qualify for Medicaid. People used to do that. They said, I'm running out of money. I'll just give my money away to all my kids and charities and just show up and say, I'm ready. You know, it's like, well, that's not going to work. So they made it much harder to qualify for those things today. And that's why there's a whole industry of teaching you how to structure things to get rid of your assets so you qualify for Medicaid. It's a bit crazy, but there it is.
I assume you'd have a very simple life if that was what you're going to end up on. The number one thing that most retirees seem to enjoy doing when they get to that stage is to travel, because they've been busy in their lives and haven't done a lot of traveling. So there's sort of other money you need as well besides your living expenses.
Well, people always project what your retirement expenses are going to be compared to your living expenses. And they say, in retirement, I don't have to commute anymore. Or I don't have to buy fancy clothes. You find other ways to spend money you didn't have time to during your working life. So people typically say, my retirement expenses are going to be 60% of my living. No, 80%, if not 100%. But as you say, you spend it on travel. You spend it on, you know, your grandkids. I mean, you spend it on other things that you wouldn't have spent it on before.
Yeah.
I did a cruise from Los Angeles to Hawaii. And there was a woman on there who had gone around the world, I think it was 120 times.
Uh-huh.
They gave her a big medal. She was like, she lived on the boat. And then she just, you know, that's what she did. And it was, I think each round the world trip was like $120,000 or something like that.
Oh, my goodness.
And they gave her a bulk discount, basically, because she just lived on the boat.
Oh.
So she got a lot of travel in, but went through an awful lot of money, something like that. So there are some people that really like to travel. And that's a nice way to do it. Around the world cruise. You don't have to fly anywhere. You just go and see all these beautiful places. And there it is. So there's a dramatic way to spend your retirement money.
Okay. You also I am a speaker, and you do teleseminars. Is that something that you promote through your website, or how would people get in touch with you?
Yes, go to moneyanswers.com. And I do. I mean, I like to do it where there's a big group on specific topics. I mean, we've touched on a bunch of the topics I talk about all the time. Getting out of credit card debt is a big topic on these things. Certainly saving for retirement. Maximizing your employee benefits is a big thing. As you can tell, I cover a lot of different ground. And so I love doing teleseminars and helping people on whatever topic it may be. I mean, a lot of things we've talked about today, people have never heard about before. They don't know you can sell your life insurance policy for hundreds of thousands of dollars.
No.
They don't know you can pay your mortgage off in 5 years instead of 30 years on the same level of income. They don't know that there are safe investments where you get 8%. I mean, we've talked about a lot of things today that most people have no clue exist because they're not financially educated.
Yeah.
So that's what I love to do, is educate people about all these opportunities. And it's a very uplifting, positive thing. And then they send me emails from all over the world, and I call them back and write them back and love to help people, whatever. I get them from people who are desperately poor to people who have $1 million to invest and everything in between.
Well, it's been really, really interesting and very educational talking to you. Your tips that you've given have been very eye-opening, and I'm sure my listeners would be able to take advantage of the information that you've shared today. And I'd like to thank you very much for sharing this information, and it's been great meeting you.
Thank you so much, Anne. I really appreciate it. Hopefully we helped your listeners a little bit. And they can always contact me again, moneyanswers.com. I've got links. I've got videos. I've got the little Ask Jordan button. I just love to help people wherever they are in the world with their financial issues.
Thank you. It's been great. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Anne.
You have been listening to the podcast show of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson. For more information on the show's guests and being retirement ready, pop on over to my website, www.annnelson.com.au, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Until next time, be happy, stay healthy, and help somebody.